That's how you know we're still in the north, because we still have basements.
Oh, that's true.
There, see? Virginia is the north. I told you.
Hey, Alan, do you have a basement?
Nobody in Texas has a basement.
Who is it? What's up, bud? My show's on. This is live on the air, okay?
Now we're live on the air.
Hi, peoples.
That's Joey.
Hi, Joey.
So known as the boy.
Hi.
That's Andy. He's the one you talked about sharks with.
Yeah, he likes sharks.
I do like sharks.
He remembers that. What's up, bud?
Hi.
Hi.
Mine doesn't talk.
What are you doing, Dad? What are you doing?
Yes, exactly. He came in all the way in to say hi because he knows my show has started. Yeah. Guess right, you used to have a girl you have to worry about burying bodies. Both of you.
Yeah.
I'm the only one who birthed the penis.
God. Oh, someone make that into a ringtone.
I guess technically I didn't birth them.
Nope, you did. I know Italian biology.
wait, it's different?
Sure is. First up, that's where the whole alienation, they've got the nerve plexus under their arms, comes from.
What?
Yeah, man, you saw Alien Nation.
What are you talking about?
What? James Caan and Manny Patinkin, and you haven't seen this?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, God, it's one of the best sci-fi buddy cop movies ever.
Oh, buddy cop? No Which wonder one? I didn't like it.
Alien Nation.
Oh, man, how could you miss Alien Nation, Alan?
Oh, it's so
good. Sam Francisco.
Yeah, and he's got a Freedom Arms 454 Casull.
Right, it's one of the first appearances of the 454, isn't it?
It is. That was the whole point. They wanted to do the whole Dirty Harry thing and try to get a little bump on that.
1989. I didn't have a TV then.
Was it really that late? Huh.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
There was a movie in 1988. There was a TV series in 1989.
You know what movie I was confusing it with briefly? Enemy Mine.
Oh, another good one.
Gossett Jr. Yes.
Yep. And coked up Dennis Quaid.
That's right. Which that one was a little bit earlier. That's what the time
missed,
frame of.
Missed that one too.
Yeah. Oh, come on.
I was a huge sci-fi geek, Alan. It was like,
you need to watch it just for the little baby Zammies.
Nope. I'll pass.
Alan's not so much the sci-fi.
You would like both of these movies.
I like science fiction, but most science fiction movies are just horrible. I can't watch them because they just
these
suck.
These are not movies. I mean, these are not sci-fi movies. These are movies set in sci-fi settings.
Yeah.
Enemy Mine is pretty much Roots set in outer space. Alien Nation is just simply lethal weapon with an aliens plot twist.
Okay.
Because there was that war in the late 80s. We didn't know which of the two factions was going to win out, if it was going to be lethal weapon buddy cop movie or Die Hard, I'm the only person who can save humanity. And we all know Die Hard won.
I always come down on the Die Hard side because I really don't like buddy cop shows or movies.
Oh, but come on, Lethal Weapon 3, the screenplay was written by the Brady campaign. Oh, and that is my favorite movie of the series. Oh, I love 3. 3 is cop so shows. Funny. Yeah, cop killer bullets and converting Tech Nines to full auto and evil capitalists.
That's right.
So good. So good. I don't think they meant for it to be as good as it was, but it sure was.
All right then.
Yep. Oh, by the way, Jay.
Yes?
Your former MNP9 isn't fucked up anymore.
Oh, he took the mag disconnect out?
I did.
Yay!
Is that legal in Massachusetts?
Oh yeah, the magazine disconnect is just a feature in Massachusetts.
It's like an appendix. You can take it out.
It's not required.
It's like Corinthian leather.
It's not like your pancreas.
That and also...
it's not a pancreas.
It is 100% legal to unfuck any gun that Massachusetts has fucked up for you.
Yeah. So how did they let that slip by?
Yeah. Well, to be fair, the magazine disconnect is not a Massachusetts construct.
No. The magazine disconnect is not written anywhere in Massachusetts laws, so...
And it existed long before Mass started fucking with gun shit, so...
Yeah. Yeah, no,
that was a dumb idea. Who thought that stupid thing up?
Browning.
That was idiotic.
It wasn't... According to Tam, it wasn't Browning. According to Tam...
No, but in the development of the high power, it was not John Moses Browning.
Oh, no, Jay. Don't be talking high powers just yet, because I've got a Colt 1908 made in 1917 with a magazine disconnect.
Really?
Yeah, and evidently the earlier iterations do not have a magazine disconnect. And later on, somebody in Colt decided that it would be safer if it would not fire with the magazine removed.
That just makes no sense at all to me.
Makes no sense whatsoever. Massa Yub and I should have asked him that when I saw him at the NRA show in Houston. But Massa Yub wrote an article at one point saying that there was an advantage to a magazine disconnect in that if the police officer was about to lose control of their weapon, they could dump the magazine and then the gun would be bricked.
Oh, that's idiotic.
Except for, yeah, how do you know when you're going to lose control of your weapon? You could say, well, geez, this guy's really got some good torque on it right now and I'm going to lose control of it, in which case, how can you hit the magazine release?
Right.
And then, of course, it's one of those
magazine release, you can be pulling the trigger.
That sounds like those things, something that a couple of stoners think up when they're sitting around the dorm room high as a kite, you know, with the whole, hey, man, what about, you know, whatever.
No, it's really not that. It's really just some dipshit, you know, shoots a hole in his floor because he drops the magazine and then considers the gun unloaded and goes, man, we should do something about that.
It's still stupid.
Sure is.
It's very stupid.
It sure is. It was come up by someone who is both stupid.
In fact, I'm looking at the only thing stupider right now.
Oh, there's lots more stupider.
And do you know what that is?
My screen cap?
The electric Harley Davidson.
What?
Huh?
Are you kidding me?
Hold on, I'll throw it in chat.
Oh my fucking God. Is that real?
I've seen it enough places from enough people.
Do they?
By the way, while Jay's throwing that up,
do they put a noise generator on it that goes?
Potato, 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 potato.
But yes, to close out the gun thing, so that we can now talk about Harley Davidson's is the quote unquote safety features that are required by Massachusetts are just required for the dealer to sell it to you.
Yeah,
and so as soon as you get a hold of the gun, you can do whatever you want to it. So you can you can put an Apex trigger into a gun that has a mandated 10 pound Massachusetts trigger, or you can pull out a superfluous manual safety or whatever the hell you want to do. You can buy.
What if you want to sell it to somebody else? Do you have to put it back the way it was, or can you sell it to them just like it is?
Not for now. Once this new bill gets rammed through, you will.
What does it say on that one for the new bill?
There's no more private sales.
Oh.
All sales have to go through a dealer, which means in order for them to transfer your gun, it will have to be compliant.
Do used guns count though, Jay?
It has to go through a dealer. The dealer has to can only transfer compliant guns.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's gonna suck.
Yep. Yes, it
is. That's gonna suck bad.
And that is absolutely intentional.
Damn.
Not to mention, Massachusetts will be the only state in the union where your ability to own a firearm is 100% dependent on the whim of the chief of police.
Yep.
Because there's the legislation currently on the docket will take away the shall issue FID, which covers shotguns and low capacity long arms, and make them part of the may issue, which means if the chief of police or whoever the designated firearms licensee, license grantor, whoever that is, if they don't like you and they say, nope, you're unsuitable, you cannot own a single firearm or ammunition in Massachusetts.
Wow.
They are absolutely begging for this to go to the Supreme Court. Because once it goes through, somebody will get denied, and they will have an ironclad slam dunk case that their Second Amendment rights have been denied with for no reason. They're not an unsuitable, they're not a prohibited person. Ergo, there is no reason for their rights to be denied. I don't know what DeLeo's thinking. I really don't.
He's thinking he hasn't been fitted for his orange jumpsuit yet.
It's just because what they're ramming through is so over the top unconstitutional.
They don't care.
I think the backlash is going to be worse than they think. I think this could be the thing that overturns May issue.
Constitution doesn't matter.
Nobody
cares.
Then again, they'll just give this whole thing to Lois Lerner and let her shred it. Yeah. Oh, I mean, lose it.
She lost her emails in a tragic boating accident. Yeah. And by the way, they're talking about we can't get her emails because her computer crashed and then we recycled the hard drive.
Right.
Here's the thing.
I guarantee you're
on their hard drive, right?
Yeah, I guarantee the emails are not even remotely on that hard drive. They're triplicate on like a big server farm somewhere.
Well, but here's the thing. They're treating it like these emails are like her AOL online email account, right? And she's downloading them to her local computer on a POP3 or something. That ain't how it works. I guarantee you. I would be stunned and amazed if this was not a exchange email system.
Right. Well, especially for someone of her position is one of those. You got to assume that at that high up, you're doing emails from home as well.
Well, sure.
So therefore, you should have access to all your old emails and all your new emails, no matter where you log in from.
Oh, they're on the server.
They're on the server, exactly.
They're not stored locally. That's ridiculous.
No. So they disappeared.
They've got backups of the backups.
Well, see, here's the thing. A lot of people don't understand how email works, but
it's not a series of trucks.
Well, not only that, but it's not a letter that you put in the U.S. mail and send it. And when you send it, you don't have it anymore.
Right.
It's in your sent mail. It's saved. Your mail client saves it. Your server saves it. It's saved somewhere. So, she can say, I lost all that email, but everybody else that sent her mail still has a copy of that.
Yep.
And if they don't comply to a request to present it, they're guilty of obstruction of justice. Just like anyone else would be.
Alan, you're sexist.
Try that shit.
Talking about male servers. Female servers?
Try that shit. Try telling the SEC, or try telling a prosecutor in a lawsuit, I'm sorry, we can't produce that information for your discovery request. Our mail server crashed. We don't have it anymore.
Or even better, try saying to the IRS, sorry, all my tax documents got lost when my computer crashed.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, try to see if I can't pay. I can't pay you this year. I'll speculate on.
I what promise I don't owe any taxes.
I gave my entire salary to charity, but all of my receipts were on my computer and I lost them. So, hey, you've already established that this is a viable response. Of course, it doesn't work that way. You'll still go to jail. But
I only made $35 this fiscal year. And then when they ask a second question, I plead the fifth.
Yeah. the dog ate my receipts.
Well, but here's the thing. Let's play learner's advocate here.
Ooh, I see what you did there.
And let's say that their email system was so incompetently set up that all her email was stored on the local machine on her office computer. And she never actually had to email anybody from home because, you know, she's a, you know, liberal political hack and probably never did anything anyway. Her assistants did everything and, you know, maybe even went so far as to print her email out and hand it to her, you know. You know, the fact that the IRS would be so incompetent as to allow something like that to happen.
Yeah. That the only copy, the only versions of her emails are gone forever. Right.
Yeah.
Pull the other one. It's got bells on.
Yeah, I'm not buying it. And they didn't come up with this story until how many years after they got the request?
Right.
I mean, wasn't it, 2011, 2010? I don't remember. But it's been at least a couple of years since they got subpoenaed for this. And they're just now, after stall, they're just now coming up with the dog ate my homework excuse.
Well, they went to go look for the computer and they couldn't find it.
Uh-huh.
And so they talked to IT and they went, oh no, that computer crashed and has been, and nobody knew. I also have a girlfriend in Canada you can't check.
Yeah, exactly.
She totally puts out and gives up the
bar. I met her at camp.
I keep thinking back to the unholy shitstorm about the Thanksgiving turkey.
Oh, yeah.
That George Bush posed with a plastic turkey for 5 fucking seconds. And it was this huge story that he wasn't really serving the troops. It was just a photo. Blah, 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 blah. And they went on for weeks about this fucking turkey. Yet the IRS investigates the president's political adversaries and loses. I'm making air quotes, by the way, for those of you who can't see me, which would be everybody.
Thank God.
The IRS loses those emails, and the news is like, oh, that's perfectly plausible. Next story.
Yeah.
You know, by the way, did you hear the Washington Redskins are going to have to change their name?
Oh, yeah, there's another.
Is that
travesty.
Getting played anywhere outside of here? It's huge here.
Nope,
because
I've been hearing about it.
Yeah. Okay. I'm just curious because you can't avoid it here.
Yep. How we did a whole hour on it.
Wow.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yep.
That's.
And what is it? The claim is only 30% of polled Native Americans find it offensive.
Yep.
And I'm sure that's a rigged poll.
By the way,
90% of all Americans want stricter gun control.
Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, the United Negro College Fund and the NAACP are quaking in their boots right now. That and also the lesser known charity WIC for Spix.
I like the one. I like somebody suggested calling them the Washington Tea Party, but.
Well, another interesting thing about sports teams is, like, I was actually listening to Cam Edwards on NRA News, and he made a joke about changing their name to the Washington Buffoons. And that was really humorous, but then I started thinking about it, and, I mean, it's one of those things of the, you know...
That's offensive to Buffs.
You know, when you come up with the, you know... I don't even get the offensive to Buffs joke, Jay.
Buffoon.
I know, but it's... Is it supposed to be funny?
Apparently not.
But, excuse me. But, I mean, it's one of those things of the... You know, think about sports teams' mascots. You know, Eagles and Bears and, you know, Badgers and
Wolverines!
Wolverines, Hurricanes. It's all, you know... Powerful, cool, you know, and then, you know, the human stuff, the, you know, the Raiders and, you know, even the Fighting Irish, which is kind of an offensive one, you know, when you boil it down. But even then, you know, it's the mascot's made up to be kind of badass. You know, he's this scrappy little Irish dude, you know, the same with the Boston.
You could almost make the claim that it's a thing of respect.
Mascots are a hunt. You cannot make a team that is the Buffoons or the, you know, or the Maggots or something like that, you know, sort of idea. you know, you could try it, but then, you know, the mascot artist would come through and they'd draw the most badass maggot they could draw.
It'd be, you know, a maggot that kicked your ass.
Yeah, sort of idea is it's if you're naming your team after them, it's a complete sign of respect.
Right.
It's, you know, you don't hear any Swedes talking about all the different Raiders or all these things, or, you know, Buccaneers. They're fucking pirates. They're bad people. We kill them and throw them into the ocean.
Ooh, maybe they could be the Washington Ninjas.
Washington Ninjas.
Or would that be racist? I don't know.
To quote Pete Holmes, what's the difference between a ninja and an Asian burglar? But the
I was lobbying. But then for you could have.
But then you could have the. Then you could have the ninjas playing the Buccaneers, and you could finally get a ninjas versus pirates.
Yeah, and then every time they score the fans throw smoke bombs into the field.
Yes, and disappear.
The whole crowd.
Yep, and then there'll be novelty shirkin' night.
Yeah. It'd be great. See, I think we're really onto something here.
Jay, don't laugh, because novelty bat night's not a good idea either. Giving a whole bunch of drunks a sawed-off bat.
Novelty, and it's nunchuck night for the first 10,000 fans.
Have nunchucks ever done anything in your life except hurt the user? Anybody that's ever tried nunchucks that hasn't hit themselves right in the head.
There was a whole thing like in the early 90s where like police forces were trying to issue nunchucks instead of batons.
That's crazy.
that right there is when we started to see the militarization of the police forces.
It really was.
They had to go to all black to be ninjas.
Because it was all about, like, one of the big things that I always saw whenever the news reports were doing it was talking about these were like, you know, hardened plastic or hardened rubber handles with a heavy duty cord for the quote unquote chain, and they were talking about the fact that, you know, you could use them for wrist locks and for pain compliance. So yeah, no, it was definitely respect my authority. It was the 1990s version of the drive stun.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, you know what?
What?
I never did that. It is Thursday, June 19th, 2014. This is episode 109. Longest intro ever.
And Weird is only slightly sick.
And Brita is out sick.
Brita is on assignment.
Assignment.
We're the Squirrel Report. She's on assignment. It sounds so cool.
Okay.
They always used to say Matt Lauer is on assignment when really he was in cocaine rehab.
He was on assignment.
His assignment was to get off that booger sugar.
Hey, shall we talk about the book?
Yeah, let's talk about some books.
Okay.
Jay, did you read the book?
No.
Was it on your other hard drive?
His computer crashed.
My Kindle crashed, and I had to shred it.
Hey, man, my Kindle crashed. I always tease my dad about my Kindle, about the fact, you know, I've got, you know, 100 books on this thing, and it's teeny tiny, and it's light, and then we went on vacation together. My goddamn Kindle crashed, and my dad kept going, oh, you're still on the same page. You're not doing a very good job of reading that book. Oh, look, you're still on the same page. Yes, Dad, my Kindle.
I really can't get into Kindles. I just can't. I need Dead Tree to read. It's just one of those things.
See, I'm the other way around. I was super duper heavy book reader back when I was going out to sea, because that was my option for entertainment. I could either read lots and lots of books or be bored.
And, I think a lot of it is I associate it with being on a plane, because it's like the one time I can make use of it. Which, by the way, entire Sherlock Holmes collection was free at one point. I hit it just right. That's been...
I think it's still free, but
there's all kinds of stuff that's free.
A lot of those old classics are free.
Yep.
But the But yeah, no, I like it because I commute in on the train every day, and so yeah. I can throw my book in my in my backpack. I don't have to worry about it coming out all mangled because, you know.
Books. I'm just thinking of, you know, having the Kindle set out of my steering wheel would probably be a recipe for disaster.
Well, you don't read it while you're driving.
You obviously have not covered the same highways I have, Alan.
Jay, you are making that fat NRA money and you don't have a driver yet?
Yeah, that's it.
I thought you'd be in the back of your Bentley. And the only
reason take me to the range, Jeeves.
The only reason why Jay doesn't read that much on his commute is because he doesn't shut the fuck up and talking about his driver's day. Hi, Big Jeeves. What's going on? Oh yeah, no, it's really good. Yeah, no, the wife's been bugging me, but you know what's going on and all that. Oh, I just picked up some new guns. It's gonna be really, really cool. Hey, do you want to go shooting this weekend?
No, we actually take pot shots at the poor people. No, hey. That would be wasteful.
That would, especially the price of ammo these days.
As long as it's not 22, which does not exist anymore. And no, I don't know what happened to it. I don't have a pallet in my office.
I burned through a bunch at the range today, and I was like, oh, man.
You mean
it didn't feel the same.
You mean the NRA doesn't have a stash of 22 down there in the basement for you?
No, we're not sitting on pallets and pallets, really. Actually, the stash that the NRA has in the vault of 22 is significantly less than what I have.
Wow.
It's well, you have to understand, there's a wide variety of different manufacturers and weights because of our testing protocol.
You have to try them all.
Yeah, exactly. It's having a huge stash of one particular brand isn't as useful as having 200 or 300 rounds of 10 different brands. So,
interesting.
But there's stuff there.
So anyway, about this book.
So about this molasses disaster.
Turns out
it only affected Irish and Italian, so nobody cared.
Well, okay. That's interesting that you brought that up, because this happened 13 years after The Jungle was published, which was the Upton Sinclair expose about the plight of immigrant workers. Basically, it was the plight of immigrant workers and how horrible their working conditions and living conditions were, and all that kind of stuff.
And also detail the amount of rat parts that go into hot dogs and stuff.
Yeah, but that was actually a minor piece of it. So anyway, this is 1919. So this is 13 years after The Jungle is published. And, you know, things really haven't changed that much. I mean, you think in modern times, we kind of all get lumped in together, you know, the descendants of the English, descendants of the Irish, descendants of the Italians, descendants of Germans and all that kind of stuff. We're all just kind of clumped into as, you know, white people.
Yep.
But back,
well, except for the Italians.
Back, yeah. Back then, that was not the case.
No.
I
mean, that's one thing that bugs me about the whole race thing is that, you know, I've got English and German, you know, heritage, which is, so long as you don't go back to the Roman times, is definitely the massa race, you know, sort of idea. But then at the same time, I've got Scottish blood in me, which was definitely the slaves.
Well, yeah, and they didn't consider that if you'd have gone back to 1900 and tried to talk to people about, you know, white people and all that, they would have looked at you like you were crazy. Because, I mean, that concept didn't exist. It was much more nationality based. Mm-hmm. You were Irish or you were Italian or you were German or you were Polish or you were, you know, whatever you were. So anyway, you had all these immigrants come over and they're living in slums. And this took place in the north part of Boston, which is right, you know, the North Church, the old North Church where Paul Revere, you know, one if by land, two if by sea, that's where this is. Sort of close by. It's the north end of Boston. it's there's, you know, docks. It's in 1919, it was not a nice place, which is why they built this big tank here, because it was full of slums and tenements, and, you know, they could get away with it because nobody gave a shit.
Yep.
So
it was just filled with Italians, so nobody cared.
Well, then that's really what it was. Nobody cared. And they were all immigrants. They weren't citizens, so they had absolutely no say in city politics whatsoever. Nobody cared. So they built this giant tank, and it was a giant tank. This company imported molasses. What was it, the U.S. Alcohol company or something like that? What was the big company in charge?
It was the
United States Industrial Alcohol Company.
Yep.
What they did was this molasses is the leftovers of the sugar cane processing. So they would ship this molasses from the Caribbean, offload it off of ships into this gigantic tank, and then they would load it onto tanker cars, haul it off to some place, process it into industrial ethanol, which was then used to like make bombs and shit, mostly
gunpowder as well.
Yeah. So anyway, this giant, and how big was the tank? It was
huge. Like 50 feet tall, and I'm trying to remember what the
23 million gallons.
Yes,
that's a lot.
90 feet in diameter.
That was a lot more than I used to make the baked beans that I cooked today.
Yes,
I used, I think, 3 tablespoons.
And this thing was made by, was it sheet iron and riveted, and they built it. Okay. And this is another thing I wanted to bring up, and I'm going to stop rambling and let somebody else ramble after I mention this. But from reading this book, it's very obvious that engineering was still not exactly a science.
Yes, quality was job like 8.
There was no, it was like, oh, look, it's standing. Okay, good job.
It didn't fall over. They, yay.
You know, they built this thing.
Shit, it did work.
They built this thing, and you get a sense from reading the book, and I don't know if this is just the guy's, you know, point of view coming across or whatever, but, you know, it's like there was not a, it's a good thing it's a round tank, because they cut so many corners, it couldn't have possibly been square. You know,
yep.
I mean, this thing was, and they, you know, they tested it for leaks by filling it with water to below the level of the first row of rivets.
Right. Like, yeah, it held water. Good. Yeah,
good job. All right, we're done. Go home.
Well, if it holds water, water is, molasses is more thick. So yeah. If it holds the water, then it'll definitely hold the molasses. Huh, good.
Right. So
let's not talk about the weight differential.
And by the way, the book doesn't, it should lead off with it, because, I mean, or at least that's how Sebastian Younger did it. And I think in like The Perfect Storm. And I think that's a better way to do it, so that you kind of get an idea of, while he's doing all of his, you know, prosaic ways to make it a better read. And this book was definitely a very good read especially for such a, you know, single point historical. You know, a lot of those can be just dry.
Yep.
And this was a very, very good read, and had a very narrative feel to it. And I was always kind of wondering, as I'm reading it, how the fuck did he know this? You know, how did he, you know, is he making this up? This sounds an awful lot like speculative history.
Yes.
And instead, no, it was all grabbed from like transcripts and things like that. So actually, were they that bad? And, you know, Breida dug up the actual transcripts from the court hearing after the disaster went down, of the foreman of the site. And yeah, no, he didn't give a shit. He just, you know, he needed to get this thing done, so he got it done.
Yep.
You know, and it was one of those, like, yeah, you know, he ordered, you know, iron, steel plate that was of such and such thickness. He didn't get that plate, but, you know, he never inspected it to look to see if he got what he ordered, which, I mean, come on, who the fuck does that?
Well, they were behind. They were late. There was a ship coming. They didn't have time to, you know, time is money. Who cares, you know?
Yep. And so, so yeah, so like, so they didn't get the right stuff. They built it expediently, so they didn't do they didn't follow the plans exactly. They didn't put nearly as many rivets as supposed to, and all of that stuff. It wasn't the right steel. It wasn't the right way. I mean, essentially, it was the Big Dig, which is right nearby.
Yeah. Yeah.
So basically, they've learned nothing in Boston.
They have learned.
It was a big shock. There was a giant public works thing in Boston that was undercut by the mafia and resulted in substandard work. Here's my shocked face.
Yep. Well, to be fair though, this was all private enterprise. You don't see that shit anymore.
But yeah, that's true.
It was. It's just now the public sector can get away with it, so they don't care.
Yep.
But it's okay because the company that built the tank lost all their emails.
It's true. They lost every single one. That is absolutely true. Every single email they had was completely non-recoverable. They also lost every single iPad that the company owned.
So anyway, I highly recommend, if you're at all interested, to get this book and read it, because it is fascinating, and it is, to me, more interesting than the actual disaster itself, which was pretty damn interesting, was the view of a time that we don't spend a whole lot of time covering. It's like, this is the, you kind of learn about, the American Revolution, and then they cover the Civil War, and then,
it's the end of the year,
and
quit, World War II, have a good
summer. World War I, stock market crash, depression, World War II. So this whole turn of the century time period is almost skipped over. There's not really any video. It's kind of a. And I thought that was very interesting. The description of how people lived at that time I found very interesting. And, yeah. And they were you hear about poor people today. They ain't poor.
Yeah,
these people were, these people were poor. Let me, they were these. They had two of the victims that died were these two little kids that were at the tank that day, collecting the molasses that had leaked out of the tank,
right?
Like, so they could eat.
Yep.
That was their dinner.
That really kind of was, So
molasses leavens. That's what's for dinner, kids.
Yep. So
and also, there's also the big, the political side of it too. There's all these anarchist groups popping up.
Yes.
And all these, the first speculation was that this place had been dynamited by an anarchist group.
Well, that was the claim.
It was a pretty reasonable claim too, because stuff was getting blown up all over the place, right around it, and all over the country.
Yeah, and the U.S. Alcohol Company desperately wanted it to be a terrorist act, because then they weren't liable for it.
Yep.
Turns out it wasn't.
No, but the big thing that got me, because I'm with you, Alan. I definitely thought that. The whole molasses disaster was really impressive and horrible and all that, especially when you realize, people drowned in molasses.
Yeah.
How fucked up is that? God. Yeah. That just sounds like the absolute worst.
And let me tell you, from the descriptions in the book, if you're drowning in molasses, it's not quick.
No.
I was done. Doug and I always said drowning in beer would be great, but he's not here, and I got two soakers, and this sucks.
Strange brew reference.
I had to go with the strange brew quote.
Oh shit! Anyway, go ahead, Weird. Sorry.
Yeah, so the disaster is really amazing, and the complete and utter lack of oversight and essentially predictability of this is. The manager of the site had one of his workers coming through with chunks of the tank that had fallen off inside of it.
Yeah.
And he was just saying, look, this thing is falling apart. And people would talk about, like, you know, thinking thunder was coming by. No, they're just pumping molasses into the tank, and the tank is groaning.
Yeah, and it'd sit there and burble and make sounds.
Yep. And, yeah, and so, yeah, it was, you know, making noise, and this guy was, like, sleeping, in, you know, sleeping at the site, off the clock.
Yeah.
Just to hit the release valve late at night so that he could let some of the gas pressure off on this thing, because he just didn't want it hanging on his head that, you know, that all these people were going to get killed on his watch. And they didn't, because he got drafted and went to war, left for war, and was not in Massachusetts when this thing blew.
But so it's all his fault.
Yes. Yes, Jay, that is the takeaway of this.
It's, you know who it is? It's Gavrilo Princip's fault, because if he hadn't killed Archduke Francis Ferdinand, we wouldn't have World War I, and then that guard wouldn't have gone off to war.
Yeah, but really it's Austria-Hungary's fault for getting so damn big. But the, you know, so that's a really interesting thing, and that's definitely the... what brings you to it. But I really found the whole political landscape of just the immigrants and their kind of isolation from society, because a lot of them didn't speak English, and a lot of them, you know, they couldn't vote, so they just really didn't feel like they were necessarily part of the city of Boston or the country of America. And then on top of that, you had all the anarchists, and then you had all of the fucking government over, you know, just... you know, just complete jackbooted government thug business. I mean, oh, it's one of those things of the, you know, hearing all this, you know, Obama stuff, you know, you start, you know, you especially like, you know, if you listen to like right-wing talk radio, the big thing is just the fact that just the, oh, this is the downfall of society and all of this is, you know, gloom and doom. And it's not great. And I'm not going to suddenly, you know, turn around and say, you know, all we got to do is elect Hillary and everything will be better, you know, sort of idea. But at the same time, They were arresting people for writing subversive newsletters.
Oh yeah,
all these people were doing was were writing pro anarchy newsletters, and they were getting thrown in the pen.
It's been far worse than it is now, several times.
Yes, and so I mean that was really absolutely my favorite part of the book, was just going, Jesus, they did this?
Oh yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just one of those, especially, you know, again, In the backdrop of the Obama administration and all of his, you know, the Constitution's a living document, which means I can do whatever I want, or I'll just write this executive order, or, yeah, I don't think I want Obamacare to happen quite yet, so we're just going to say, no, it's not happening. Or the whole, you know, Eric Holder saying, nah, yeah, technically speaking, your medical marijuana or your recreational marijuana is legal in your state, but it's illegal federally, but... no, trust us, we won't raid you. And like so many people are thinking like, oh yeah, the Obama administration is making the brave step on drugs. I'm like, no, that's more terrifying.
Yeah.
You know, that's selective enforcement is hands down like the most terrifying thing out there. Cause that's one of those things of the, you know, I was saying as one of my coworkers, we're talking about like the whole, you know, NSA business and all that, and she dropped the, well, if you've got nothing to hide, what are you worrying about? I'm like, we all have something to hide. There's so many ways that you can commit a felony that we've all done it a bunch of times. She goes, yeah, well, if we've all committed a felony, then it's not like they're going to round us all up. I said, no, they're just going to round up the people they want to round up.
Yep.
And they've got the juice on them. No, this person's a dangerous criminal.
That's right.
But that's not happening here. That was happening in Boston back then. And I mean, New York and all around the country. And that's just, you know, I mean, that's just something that we gotta, you know, we gotta remember.
Yep.
All right.
Get air, drink.
Yeah, so Jay.
Yes.
You grew up around there, sort of.
Yes. Well, 30 miles north, but.
Apparently, you've said the molasses flood is mentioned in the duck tour.
It is part of the lore.
The lore of the thing. So anyway, this thing, when it burst, what it was like a, what'd they say, like a 25, like a 25 foot high wall of molasses.
wave.
Moving.
It was like a tsunami of molasses.
Moving 35 miles an hour.
Which I kind of have to call shenanigans on that because I didn't think molasses ever moved.
Well, this stuff was under pressure and it was hot.
I know.
So just imagine that. 35 miles an hour. You can't outrun that.
No. No, even like they were saying, the horses were caught up in it. And you know that they took off like a shot as soon as that burst.
And this stuff is so thick and viscous that, it's far worse than water. I mean,
it's worse than oil.
Yeah.
You know, this is worse than like motor oil.
So
this is, like I'm trying to, like, it's worse than like corn syrup even, or even maple syrup.
I think the only thing that could be worse is those instances you hear about every now and again where an asphalt truck jackknifes and dumps on top of, usually a minivan or a school bus or something. It always seems that like napalm, asphalt sticks to kids.
Yeah, so does molasses, but
sure did.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that it sounds hysterical until you realize that, no, 21 people died.
Yeah. And a whole bunch more people got hurt.
Yeah. And this was an absolute unmitigated disaster and a nightmare to clean up because it does
the worst part
everywhere.
And then it solidifies
deep in the streets of Boston.
Yeah.
Now imagine a major city with 3 feet of gooey, sticky crud everywhere.
Well, I think this was before the show started, but Alan was also talking about the whole, death trends, mostly talking about my lovely illness from my daughter, about, on the fact that, if this was 1919, I'd be dead. Also the whole thing, one of the things they talk about is the fact that they go, thank goodness it was in the wintertime. Because otherwise the flies would be breeding off this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And that would have killed so many more people just from the pestilence.
Ah, but the pestilence is the best part.
Yeah. Thank you, writer number two. But we're definitely going to go with famine on this one. Sorry, Jay. That old pale horse dude, he gets too much.
The picture from Wikipedia is actually pretty fascinating. I mean, you can...
It's actually the space shuttle landing in Boston Harbor.
You can see the foundation the tank was sitting on. You can actually see pieces of the tank laying around. And you just see this, all these buildings, pushed off their foundations and collapsed. And
that's at least the picture that I think you're looking at is the elevated rail system.
Yes, over to the left. Yeah.
Yep. So it got mangled.
Yep.
Right. Oh no, you're looking at the top one.
Yeah, I'm looking.
There's the L. There's one a little further down. These are all in the book as well.
Yep.
You can see the harbor.
Yeah.
You can see the harbor.
You can see the boats there, and it. I mean, this was
Savannah Line and Warren Line, and oh yeah.
I don't know. Yep. What it just was just fascinating to me, the whole, I mean, this is obviously pre OSHA, but
yeah.
I mean, this is
well, you figure this is what paved the way for OSHA.
Well, yeah.
And the EPA and all of the redundant, superfluous government agencies we have that make life so difficult.
Yeah, but there was a lot of stuff that happened about this time that paved the way, like you said, for all this. This, the Jonestown flood was about the same time because they had the big dam that nobody paid. They just piled a bunch of dirt in the place and said, "Hey, good enough," and then they never bothered to do anything with it. And then it gave way. It flooded and wiped out the whole town. This was at a time when, I guess it was the end of the life is cheap era.
Yeah.
People were used to dying in weird and bizarre ways, and nobody gave a shit about it until suddenly everybody gave a shit about it. And I think this event had a lot to do with that because it was one of the first class action lawsuits that cost a company a shitload of money.
Well, cost the company the company.
Well, yeah.
They disappeared after this.
Right. And well, before that, companies got away with, you know, it was like, yeah, so what?
Yep.
You know, people died. So what? People, you know, they took their pay and took their chances.
Yeah.
And you know, it was after this time where several of these events happened and companies started getting sued and losing. Suddenly we have, you know, standards and companies start to care a little bit about their employees and whether they die or not in horrible ways.
And that was not a bad thing. I mean, all the future, we talk about OSHA being a pain in the ass, but you know, OSHA was a really, really good thing when it was started. The problem is that, you know, once it solved all the problems that it needed to solve, then suddenly it needed to justify. It's just like SWAT teams. SWAT teams themselves aren't evil. I mean, it's one of those, if you have a hostage situation and all you've got is Barney Fife with his, you know, with his K-frame revolver, you know, you're not going to fare so well. You know, I mean, the East Hollywood shootout was, you know, a great example of just how crippled the police can be when suddenly things get way hairier than
the Miami shootout.
The Miami shootout as well. Yeah, exactly. That suddenly when the police are completely underprepared with weapons and tactics, then suddenly they can just get screwed over hardcore. And that's so there's definitely utility for things like SWAT teams and OSHA and things like that. The problem is once they solve all those problems, or in the case of SWAT teams, it's every town wanted one. Oh, that's cool. They got a tank and they got machine guns and all that. We want that too. That'll be really, really cool. Yeah, well, except for you got to use it. Well, that's okay. We heard somebody had some pot plants. We'll kick down their door and throw a flashbang into their baby's crib, and we'll walk around with our MP5s with a finger off the trigger with the parents prone down on the ground.
We'll drive MRAPs through the city pointing rifles at people who are told to shelter in their to stay in their homes.
To get another Boston area business. To get a 19-year-old
kid hiding in a boat that the homeowner finds.
Yep.
Go Boston strong.
Yeah, or even better, we'll shut down a major mall and have helicopters and MRAPs all through the parking lots for a dude walking to work with an umbrella. Who got to work.
No, there were no MRAPs there.
I think there were.
That would just be silly. There were helicopters, and SWAT teams.
No, they had the armored personnel carriers. That was on the front page of the Globe, Jay.
Gosh.
Yeah, no, they definitely had the armored command centers and all that stuff. Oh, it's because they had them.
Did they run around going SWAT, 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 SWAT?
Oh. Yeah, so
here's my take on all this, and we're getting way off the topic, but I can't resist because I'm that way. I think SWAT is something that somebody thought up, like mag safeties and school zones and crap like that. They thought it up and said, hey, this sounds like a really good idea, let's do this. And never really actually looked at whether or not it actually does any good. Because you say, oh yeah, you need firepower, you need to take on these guys and stuff like that. Except that when this stuff happens, how successful are SWAT teams at resolving the situation?
Yeah, really.
Compared to the way they did it before SWAT existed.
Or just when they simply did a simple change of just the in the trunk or in an overhead vault of all of the patrol vehicles, we'll put an AR-15.
Right.
And all of a sudden, that works out pretty darn good.
Yeah.
Well, the real funny part is that when it comes to people that they really do need a SWAT team for, like the guys that they know have a shitload of guns, what do? They send them a note.
Yeah. Come see us.
Come on
you want
down.
A TV.
Come on down and have it. Yeah, exactly. You want a free TV, come to this location.
Yeah.
You know, Which is exactly your point.
Right.
That before they had all these nice, shiny, armored vehicles and machine guns, they had to be a little smarter about it.
Yep.
Rather than just kicking in the doors, which, by the way, they still don't do. If you've got a guy that's, like, you know, legitimately machine gun owner or class three dealer or whatever, they're not kicking in his door.
Nope.
Because as shiny as your gear might be, if that dude's really turned and he's got a full auto 308, vest ain't going to stop that.
Nope.
And having five of your buddies rappelling in ain't going to stop that.
Nope.
It's much better to grab the guy by surprise when he's in town.
Or lay siege and hope that he comes out because he needs food.
Yep.
Or again, send him a note. Hey, congratulations. Yeah.
You're missing the number one tactic of SWAT teams, which is set the place on fire.
There you go. The janitor.
No, that's solution. More the FBI's domain. Let's get it straight.
No. LAPD did it just fine.
Oh, the Philadelphia. Okay, Philadelphia did too.
Philadelphia did it too. That's by the
no,
way.
No. Philadelphia burned down the whole block.
That is true.
That's true. Yeah, they burned down. Well, it's hard not to in Philadelphia because the buildings are all stuck together.
I believe it's called "Let the Fire Burn." There's a documentary on that.
We don't care. Let the motherfucker burn.
Yeah. No, but the it's a documentary on Netflix, and it's streaming. It's really good. Plus, it's got a whole bunch of young videos of dastardly, horrible Philadelphia area politicians before they, you know, before they became nationally known for being dastardly, horrible people. All right, somebody call in. There's got to be someone other than me, Jay. 214-530-0036.
Yeah, you know what? We've gone this whole time and nobody's called in. I think everybody hates us.
They want to talk to Breeden, not us.
Eh.
I don't want to talk to those losers.
Alan, play the sound effect. They'll think it's Breeden.
Oh. Oh, shit. I don't know why. Hang on. I don't have it up. I closed it.
But yeah, no. Well, Jay, when did your relatives come to this country?
My dad's were like in the '20s.
Yeah.
My grandmother and grandfather were like children when they came over. Yep. My mother's parents were like in their 20s, 30s.
Yeah.
My grandfather, I mean, I've seen his picture when he immigrated. I've seen his actual papers when he came over. It was like 1940, if I'm not mistaken. He was like 30 years old.
Yep.
And a right handsome gentleman, which obviously I don't take after his side. But yeah. So, you know, pretty much after all of this happened, but before World War II, because one thing my ancestors were smart enough to get the fuck out of Europe before that shit went down.
Yeah.
They went, Nazis, nuts to you.
Yeah, that's always an interesting thing whenever I, you know, hear about people that, that have immigrated here is, you know, all that of the, or, you know, asking people on their heritage, because it's always neat to see, like, all right, what caused your relatives to get the hell out of Dodge?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, for my mom's parents, it was definitely World War II. For my dad's parents, I think it was just that, well, there was nothing there for them. The farms weren't, you know, they'd gotten pretty much crowded out of existence, and they were basically looking for open space and said, yep. You know what? There's a lot of open space in America.
Yeehaw.
Yeah.
What about you, Weird? Where did your ancestors come from?
I mean,
New Weirdland?
Yes, New Weirdland. Let's see. The only one that I really know super duper duper well is my great great grandfather was born on a steamer heading from Europe, you know, via Germany. His parents were German. And that was They had to have been getting the hell out of Dodge for World War One.
Which, you know what's funny about Germany is it didn't even exist until about the turn of the century.
Yeah. You know,
prior to the late 1800s, Germany wasn't a country.
It's Germania.
It was a bunch of little kingdoms all clumped. You know, there was no Germany.
Don't forget about Liechtenstein, though.
Yeah. So yeah, it's kind of strange to yeah. My mother's been, you know, she's gone and got old, so she started doing this genealogy thing that all the people that go and get old tend to do. And she's certified herself as a daughter of the American Revolution and. For all that's worth. So apparently most of my ancestors have been here since like the beginning.
I'm pretty sure. I mean, the English ones have been here for a long, long, long time. Yeah. I know my English ancestors were like, you know, part of helping with the building the railroad in Portland and all of that. So they were here and established before that went through. Cause I mean, they were running machine shops and all that, which evidently was extremely lucrative business cause nothing was standardized. So
sure. You had to make it custom.
If you stripped a screw, you'd bring the broken screw end into the machine shop, and they would make you a new one because nothing, you wouldn't be able to go down to the hardware store because nothing would be the same length or pitch or anything like that, or you know, thread count or whatever other stuff you could talk about with screws.
We have a caller.
Yay!
Stunned and amazed.
It is a caller.
Is that our weekly MDev?
It's area code 520. Hello.
Hey, this is Bob Fleisig.
Oh, Bob. Hey. Otherwise known
as Cowboy Bob. That's how you pronounce your last name?
Yeah, now that we're on the topic of immigrants, my great-grandparents came over, and all this time, you know, we were told that they were Slovaks. And it wasn't until another relative dug up their immigration passage paperwork that they were Hungarians. And I never knew that. I mean, they always self-identified as Slovaks.
Huh.
But my grandfather worked on the railroads as a brakeman, of all things. And that was a dangerous job.
Yeah, that was a very dangerous job.
And then his son got a job as a Bethlehem steel worker. And I've heard horror stories about that.
Oh, yeah. Wow. So why did they not, what was your great-great-grandparents?
My great-grandparents left Austria-Hungary.
Uh-huh. Why did they not identify as Hungarian? I mean, was there some sort of stigma attached to that at the time, or?
That's one thing I never got to ask them because they were long gone before I ever saw the paperwork.
Huh. Interesting.
The ancestor.com stuff or you know, whatever.
Because, you know, there used to be, there was a, in the old days, back when being different was not a interest group. You know, people went out of their way to disassociate themselves. Well, like Weird said before, there's, you know, people that could be American Indians now, except that their you know, parents and grandparents went out of their way to erase anything that said Native American anywhere about their history.
Yep.
Part of the family legend is that my great grandfather came over hiding under a woman's skirt.
Ooh, kinky.
Because he was a deserter from the Austro-Hungarian army.
Ah. Well, you certainly wouldn't want to be known as a Hungarian if you were a deserter from Austria. Wow. That's a good story.
But you do want to hide under a woman's skirt. I'm just saying.
Well, it depends.
That's a pretty good move.
Well, depends on the woman, too.
It only depends if it's depends. If there are depends involved, yes, absolutely, under no circumstances, hide under the skirt because poop.
Oh, God. Well, thanks for rescuing us, Bob, and being our one caller on the
show.
Now
I know how to pronounce your last name. I never would have pronounced it that way. I thought it was like Flitwick, like the papers.
What?
Yeah. I think people in Eastern Europe or didn't watch enough Wheel of Fortune. They just needed to buy a vowel.
Oh, God.
Well, that's true, because the Ellis Island spelling is as it is today. But there were several other phylogics that came over, and I guess there was a different guy working, so their names got spelled different.
Wow. Well, yeah, I guess.
Originally, it was spelled F-L-A-J-C-E-K, with chicken scratches and carrots in the moss over just about everything.
Ah.
So it changed quite a bit.
Interesting.
So it looked like an 80s heavy metal band.
Yeah.
Yeah, opening for Metallica. It's awesome.
Cool.
But it's a peasant name. It means the same in German. Fleißig is as it's pronounced in German. It means industrious.
Oh.
So it's basically a peasant who bailed out of Austria-Hungary and did slave labor work on the railroads.
Wow.
Well, I also know with like a lot of the Scottish clans and all that, there are several alternate spellings, and the big reason is because literacy wasn't that big in Scotland, and so therefore people had no idea how to spell their name.
Well, but also back then, spelling was not standardized. Until Webster, you know, started printing dictionaries and stuff like that, people spelled stuff however they felt like it.
Yeah.
You know, there wasn't really a standardized, you know, you're talking about, you know, bolts being non-standardized. Words weren't standardized either.
Yeah, but you should have seen my sophomore yearbook. I mean, my name was spelled three different ways.
Oh, wow.
And none of them are right.
Yeah.
Of course not.
Oh, all right. Well, thanks for calling, Bob.
We're German students.
We're well all right, over.
Take care.
So thank you so much.
Thanks, Bob.
Okay. Bye-bye.
And Cowboy Blob. A filmmaker from Arizona.
He's like famous.
Yeah, he is.
Not quite as famous as that NRA editor dude.
Oh yeah.
I don't know.
He's like super famous.
And now he's doing
videos.
I've
been on the TV.
I've seen him on videos, man.
Yep.
That's a scary thought.
I've got nude pictures of him. I'm holding on just until I think we reached the peak of the hush money.
Oh shit! Maximum value, right?
That's right. I think he's got a couple more big times to hit, and then that's when I start cutting text out of newspapers and magazines to send a letter.
All right, everyone. That's a show.
All right.
We'll be back next week.
And hopefully with Brita.
Hopefully.
She'll be less dead.
Yes.
And hopefully I will continue to be less dead.
And hopefully we'll all be less dead.
Yeah. Except for Jay. Fuck that guy.
You know, we'd hate on him a lot less if he wasn't, you know, one of those people.
Yeah,
well, you know, it's the dark skin. We're all a bunch of racists. You know,
if he wasn't a damn Moore and a damn one percenter.
That's right.
This wheelbarrow full of cash.
Wheelbarrow full of NRA death merchant cash.
That's right. It's only the sweetest.
Who was it? Oh yeah, I was listening to the guy. Oh God, we're gonna go so long on the show. The guy after the Hollywood jackass. Ran over a bunch of people, stabbed a bunch more, and shot a couple of people. And the guy's one of the victim's fathers up there giving this impassioned press conference about how it's the damned NRA's fault.
Right.
Like, what?
Because, you know, we put the knife in his hand.
I love this persistent rumor. I mean, you know, I'm the last person to shy away from bashing the NRA when I think it needs it. But this delusion that the NRA is some sort of lobbying organization or marketing organization for gun dealers is just insane. I don't know where they get this, and I don't know how you know, it's just like their whole, everything they do is lies. So why not lie a little more? I mean, it's ridiculous. It's a stupid lie because it's so easily disprovable.
But the media is not going to call them on it.
Well, no. Yeah, it's the NRA is now known as the corporate gun lobby.
Yeah.
But that's
even though the gun control groups are funded exclusively by Michael Bloomberg right now.
But here's the thing. There is a corporate gun lobby. It's the National Shooting Sports
Foundation.
NSSF.
But and nobody knows about NSSF.
They never say a word about NSSF.
Right.
And they are the gun lobby.
Yep.
Oh, jeez. All right. But
we are the biggest target.
Yeah, well, that's true. And the most successful, which is why they have to
kill. And the best known.
Yep.
And that's kind of what happens.
Yep.
But, and they do make some good magazines.
And wine. Don't they, Jay? Yeah. The wine is good, too.
At least one.
Hey, Jay, what's your favorite NRA-published magazine?
Well, that would have to be Shooting Illustrated, which you can get at your local newsstand.
I'm pretty sure I can't.
You're in Massachusetts.
I'm pretty sure I can't.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I've never seen it there.
But you can subscribe.
Is that legal in Massachusetts?
Yeah, but only if it's got 10 pages or less.
Yeah. Otherwise, it's an assault magazine. Oh, God. High-capacity magazines. Oh, no. Yeah,
they put a big block in the middle of it. It's the same thickness as the Texas Shooting Illustrated. But just you just come to it, and there's just a big plastic block in the middle of it that's just welded on. Oh, so God. It weighs the same, and it takes up the same amount of space.
Oh, shit.
But you've only got, like, 1/60th of the pages.
All right. Good night, everybody. We'll see y'all next week. Have a good one.